A symbol to the nation, a hero to the world. The story of Captain America is one of honor, bravery, and sacrifice. Denied enlistment due to poor health, Stephen Rogers was chosen for a program unique in the annals of American warfare, one that would transform him into the world's first super soldier. Welcome, everyone, to the Winter Soldier edition of Super Cinema. I'm here always with Ben Hamlin.
Hi, I'm Ben. Were you reading the back of the DVD box?
No, it's from the movie when he's in the Smithsonian. It's the narration.
You're right.
Yep.
And today we're joined by?
Today we are joined by Cam Mullins.
I was just about to say, give Cam a chance to introduce herself, because she didn't get to do that last
time. Oh.
So, thanks, guys.
Would you like to introduce yourself?
No, you did a fantastic job. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for that.
I'm sorry. You can introduce me if you want.
You are Donald.
Yes. That is true.
Wow.
All right, everyone. So today we're covering. Excuse me. I'm sorry. You're doing the intro.
Was I? Okay.
You are.
Today our episode is on Captain America: The Winter Soldier. Now, last week you listened to our episode for the First Avenger. I happened to do a double feature. I watched The Winter Soldier with Ben actually a couple weeks ago.
About a week and a half at this point.
Yeah, about a week and a half, but I watched it again.
Winter Soldier and Grand Theft Auto, truly the coolest hangout.
That was so good.
In which Cam tried to shoot up a strip club.
No, Grace tried to shoot up a strip club. I stole a plane. Let's be clear.
Yeah, Cam, we're very impressed. Cam stole a plane without using any weapons. She didn't even punch a person.
That's pretty good. That's pretty dang good.
And granted, I had to navigate her to the airport, but like, past that, she knew what she was doing. Anyway, okay, yeah, we are covering The Winter Soldier, which the reason Cam is here is because, Cam, this is one of your favorite movies, is it not?
It is my favorite in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, yes.
Mine as well.
That's entirely fair. I believe it's mine as well.
Ooh.
Some hesitation there.
Well, I don't remember my top five list. Here's the thing. I put my top five list on record.
Okay.
Donald and
I did too.
So if I contradict that, the comic police get to kill me.
I'm half contradicting myself. Because
you said it was Avengers. Yeah, you lied.
No. Okay, I think this is a better done film, and in the long run, it's my favorite of the MCU. But the Avengers is my favorite comic book movie as a whole, just because of the spectacle of it. It has a special place in my heart, and it's the first time anything like it has ever been done.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
Yes.
It is the most fun I've ever had at the theater.
While we're touching on our top five, and Cam, because you are our first recurring guest, James and Alexis will obviously be back eventually. But Cam, what are your top five favorite superhero movies?
Oh, that's hard. Superhero movies?
Comic book movies, actually, is the criteria.
Okay. Comic book movies. Okay. So no TV shows. Because otherwise Daredevil would be hella high up there.
I'd say you can count TV shows.
I don't know. Sticking with movies, though, definitely Winter Soldier first. Then Avengers, because it's so, so unique in what it was doing. I just remembered the old Daredevil movie. That's definitely not in there, but that's worth an honorable mention.
Bullseye.
Oh my god. Three is probably Captain America. Just because, I don't know. I was never very fond of the...
So your answer so far are movies with Captain America?
Yes, despite not actually liking Captain America all that much.
Gasp.
I love him.
All right, what's four and five real quick? And then I'll take you to task for what you just said.
No, I'm good with three. Three is a nice, solid number.
Yeah,
Hamlin.
Let's leave it with top three.
Do you expect me to break
To be fair, though, Captain America has been in every movie since his first one.
Mm-hmm.
Or it has been in a Marvel movie every year up to now.
Every single movie.
Chris Evans is in every single movie.
I can't wait to see him in Batman v Superman.
But 2011 with the first Avenger, 2012 with the Avengers, 2013 with Thor the Dark World with his cameo, which was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
2014 with the Winter Soldier, and then 2015 with Avengers 2.
Yep. And then
2016 Civil War. 2017 with possibly Spider-Man.
Yeah, in Infinity.
And then, Infinity's 2018, and then 2019,
right,
Infinity 2. 2020, who knows?
All about that 9-picture deal.
Yep.
Hey.
Yeah. I'm just imagining now Chris Evans in Batman v Superman.
Who would he play?
I'm deciding whether he should be a Batman or a Superman villain.
Hmm.
And then follow up if he should be Commissioner Gordon.
I just imagine him playing Batman in and of himself, and that's laughable.
Do you bleed?
I mean, he's pretty much...
I bleed. No one asked you.
Like, without flying and, like, super, super strength, he's pretty much Superman as Captain America.
Yeah.
Like...
Well, laser eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
Ice breath and crystal powers.
Sans those types of powers. Like, you know what I mean? As a character.
Chris Evans.
Like, if he had darker hair... He could pull off Superman.
I can see it. I can see it. He's got the
jaw.
I don't know. His jaw might be too thin.
I think it's too, like, it's there. He has a jawline.
It's there.
I don't know. What's your perspective on Chris Evans' jawline?
I don't pay attention to that.
What if he was like a really buff Joker?
That might work. I mean, Jared Leto's he's pretty buffed for it too.
Yeah, but he's not Captain America, Rick.
That's true.
What are we talking about? Winter Soldier. Okay. Yeah. So. We're covering Captain America the Winter Soldier, which is a movie that by the way, I would like to clarify that for the rest of this podcast, I will be thinking about DCU roles.
Okay.
That Chris Evans could take on. Anyway, Winter Soldier is a movie that is very, very, very modern.
Yes.
Obviously, it came out in 2014, but it feels like a movie designed for 2014 in an era of NSA spying and Edward Snowden was right, you know, posters and stuff like that. You know, it's a very, very current picture.
Yes, for sure.
And it really tackles a lot. It's like, I think it's one of the first, like, Marvel movies to really, like, tackle outside issues past, you know. I mean, to be fair, Thor is relevant with, you know, such issues as, you know, the Frost Giants are attacking. Oh God! Someone stop the Frost Giants. But you know, this is the first like kind of real world feeling Marvel movie.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the other MCU movies have that sense of fantasy and wonder and adventure, but this is the first one that really tackles something and then has a social commentary on a real world issue, like you said. What's funny is I read an article about Marcus and McFeely, who wrote the script for both the first one and this one. They had the idea of spying on people and like having all this information before the Snowden stuff surfaced, and it was just like a coincidence. And then they
really,
yeah, when that stuff surfaced, they were like, oh my gosh, so they added more to that.
Didn't the Bradley Manning shit, like, although no, that was just WikiLeaks in general, that wasn't the Snowden,
no, that wasn't the big
the NSA
big,
is legit spying on,
yeah,
Revelation.
Yeah, that wasn't the big privacy issue. And so, and as that one, you know, the Snowden stuff was pretty fresh in everyone's mind when they came in with the Hydra, you know, spying on everyone, Project Insight, like, that was really actually quite relevant, which I thought was a very nice touch to the film as a whole.
And I think we all like Winter Soldier for various reasons. I like it for that angle. I like it for its commentary on modern elements. This may shock you guys. I'm pretty against the government spying on us. It's a controversial statement, to be sure. But that's where I stand on the issue, and I don't think I waver from that too much. But like, I like that it tackles those issues, and I like that Captain America is fighting a corrupt, over-militarized government that isn't anything like our real-world government.
Never.
Never. So, like, I mean, I know that's the way I like it. Cam, what do you like about Winter Soldier, just in the general sense?
I like a lot about the movie. Definitely the...
Oh, excuse me. I'm so sorry. I don't mean to interrupt. Chris Evans for Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Oh, easily.
Anyway, sorry.
I think I'd rather have Jon Stewart, though, for the Justice League
movie. Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think, like, facially he fits Hal pretty well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm terribly sorry, Cam. What were you going to say?
No, it's good. I definitely do like in how they tie in, like, modern day, like, the whole issues with the paranoia over being watched by the government, but they do it in a way that is tied into the cinematic universe, so there's a lot of parallels. One of the things I just personally like best about the movie is how well they portrayed Black Widow.
Yes. I believe we touched on that in Age of Ultron and Avengers podcast.
I was so pissed about Age of Ultron.
Is that we think the Winter Soldier Black Widow is the best Black Widow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To the point
the
where...
The most developed, like...
Yeah.
True to her character.
Yeah. To the point where, and if you want to keep going, by all means.
No, continue.
To the point where, when I watched Avengers again, after, because I hadn't seen Avengers since before Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
I watched it again a couple weeks ago in prep for Age of Ultron / the podcast. I was legit shocked. Like, I was like, oh, wow, Black Widow talks at a higher pitch than I remembered.
Yeah.
And, oh, wow, Black Widow isn't who I mean, she also has, like, a vastly different haircut in that movie.
Every movie.
Every movie, true. But yeah, like seeing Avengers and Iron Man 2, Black Widow, differentiating from Winter Soldier, Black Widow is enormous.
Yeah, they develop the character a lot in like different angles too, because it's not just like there's the secret agent trope, right? They're very hard and everything. Like you can see different aspects of her. And it's really interesting, and it was sad how they kind of devolved that when mm-hmm. they went into Age of Ultron.
Yeah. I mean, that movie has a bunch of sins to it. So.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, we touched on this on that podcast, but it's still an enjoyable movie. But that did disappoint me. Like, I thought the relationship aspect was very forced, because at least in The Winter Soldier, I think it's very very clear. Like, will they, won't they, throughout the film? Like, oh, is Steve and you know, Natasha thing now? Because you sort of pick up, oh, she's probably has the most shared life experience with Hawkeye in Avengers. But really, it's more of a brother-sister partnership, a more partner-based thing than anything. It's never really... It's cool that they kiss, but it's not...
Yeah,
it's, you don't it's get more, that romantic aspect it's at
for,
all from...
It's for spy reasons, not yeah, sexy reasons.
Yeah.
It's not a forced romantic subplot like no, in not other at all. Movies.
Yeah.
It's more a kind of camaraderie type thing that we don't really see a lot between mm-hmm. heterosexual characters.
Exactly. Which I thought was really well done, in mm-hmm. this film at least. But yeah, I agree. The Hulk and Natasha thing was out of nowhere, especially after this movie. Yeah.
Like, we were groaning about it like a few days after it, and now that we're almost like over a month...
Yeah.
Wow, no, it's only been like 20 days.
Yeah, it's not mm-hmm. that long,
Hamlin. You know, now that we're a couple weeks out, like, it feels much worse than it did when it initially started. You mentioned camaraderie, and that's another thing I really like about this movie, is it really does feel, at certain points, like those like, five people against the world. Fury, Hill, Romanoff, Wilson, and I almost said Evans. Rogers. Like, it feels like, yeah, Captain America, Falcon, the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, and Widow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it feels like them against the world. And, like, you know, the fact that we're not... Normally with superhero movies, like, I don't know quite how to describe it, but, like, our characters are, like, they're at the top, you know, and they're, like, jumping down into crime. Mm-hmm. You know, like, Batman's, you know, off in his mansion, and he has the power in those struggles, you know, or whatever. But it's weird seeing superheroes who, like, you know, don't have the power against... you know, this force, and like they're on the opposite side of the power dynamic.
They're the underdog.
The underdog. You know, like in the previous Avengers movies, like, you know, the Avengers existed, but you know, you knew that like at least they had the power of like S.H.I.E.L.D. behind them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's weird to see it's interesting, I should say, to see these characters, you know, without S.H.I.E.L.D. behind them, without the government behind them, with in fact both of those things that they both had as their advantages are now targeted against them. And Stephen Strange.
Yeah. That's one thing I really enjoyed about this film is, like, there are two Avengers in this movie, but they're arguably the least underpowered next to Hawkeye, you know.
Yeah.
Don't hate on Hawkeye.
No, I'm not hating on him. I'm just saying, like, they're the least, you know.
They're the most, like, real people.
Down to Earth, literally, because Thor's off in Spaceland.
Yeah.
In Asgard. But, yeah, they're Hope arguably...
Hope Asgard. We must sit in my hot tub. I will have visions of the future.
Oh, boy. But yeah, these are the like the least powered on the team, and they have to face this huge force that they didn't expect. I didn't expect it. I thought the Fall of S.H.I.E.L.D. was handled very well.
Mm-hmm.
But that is another aspect that I really enjoyed about the movie, is that they have to work together in this sort of undercover... It's a political thriller. It's... Mm-hmm. And that's what many of the cast and the people making this movie have stated it being. It's a 70s political thriller.
Yeah.
And they even got Robert Redford in the movie, who's in other 70s political thrillers.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's very, very cool.
Man, that's just not a name you'd expect to drop into a Marvel. Who's in the next Marvel movie? Oh, you know, Chris Evans, Scarlett Johansson, Robert Redford.
Well,
sorry, come again?
It's an interesting trend I'm seeing in Marvel movies post-Avengers.
I mean, even Anthony Hopkins was in Thor.
Exactly. You know, even pre... Yeah, exactly.
The,
even
like, pre-Avengers. The greatest, like, method actor of all... Not the method actor, sorry. Heavily researching actor.
Yes.
I'm not trying to imply
that he became
an actual cannibal for Hannibal.
Well, when I think... Like, to all these Oscar-winning, they've like, there's at least one Oscar-winning actor in each movie, I think, if I'm correct. And I don't, did Jeff Bridges, does he have an Oscar?
But he's got to.
Like, he's a great actor. He's in Iron Man. Sam Rockwell in Iron Man 2. He's wonderful. Captain America had Hugo Weaving. Thor had Anthony Hopkins. Avengers, Sam Jackson. I mean, he's amazing. Iron Man 3 had Guy Pearce. And Ben Kingsley. Ben Kingsley.
Yeah,
right? He's Academy Award winning.
Jeff Bridges does have an Oscar.
Yeah. Okay, see, yeah. And then, you know, Captain America Winter Soldier, Robert Redford. And now I'm hearing more people in rumors and talks that are highly accredited.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just great that people who considered comic book movies silly, like, even today.
Yeah, they're really evolving as a genre.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. overall, we're tackling bigger stories, bigger issues, bigger names. You know, I mean, I'm upset that, like, you know, people are, like, panning over these types of stories, especially when Winter Soldier exists, which mm-hmm. is, like, one of the best, like, political commentary movies I've seen in a while.
I agree.
Like, you know, it's so easy to write, oh, it's just comics. And that happens of the whole industry. Mm-hmm. The whole industry, you know, the whole industry gets panned over, like, oh, it's just comics. I'm like, you don't understand how much diversity there is in comics.
Yeah, and how much people put into these movies.
Or even how much, not even how much diversity there is in comics, how much diversity there is in superhero comics is mm-hmm. enormous. Yeah. Comics in general is enormous.
Everywhere.
But, like, superhero comics alone are pretty diverse. Yeah. Anyway, it frustrates me to see an industry I love so much just off, constantly just being written off.
Did you watch this most recent Oscars?
I don't know why I had to make a written off
no.
like I was signing checks. No, I don't watch the Oscars anymore on the grounds that they are no longer relevant to anything.
Okay. Well, I still watch them. And the opening bit, like, and a couple other actors, like, sort of riffed on the fact, like, they were riffing on superhero movies, like, oh, Hollywood is just superhero movies and they don't really amount to anything. Like, they really, like,
do you know how much they've made, first off?
Like, why are you, like, all these people here at the, like, at the Oscars, like, most of them were in superhero movies. Ben Affleck, award-winning, he won the Oscar for Argo and a couple others, mm-hmm. and he's, like, an acclaimed director now. He sort of evolved from, you know, being...
Terrible.
Yeah, exactly. He's gotten much better, not just in acting as well, like, directing. And he's playing Batman, like, mm-hmm. and you're... sort of riffing on superhero movies.
Well, you just,
like,
confirmed why I shouldn't watch the Oscars.
No,
much.
Exactly.
Because they don't care about, they only care about certain genres, and they don't care about my genres.
Yeah.
Also, to say, like, you know, like, oh man, it's all about superhero movies, that doesn't make any fucking sense. You know how many superhero movies there are a year? Maybe like 3. You know how many,
although,
like, sci-fi
are,
movies there
yeah.
are a year? Probably mm-hmm. like 10.
Although they are increasing in the next, yeah. like, 4 or 5 years.
And it's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think it's great. Some people worry about oversaturation, but I think as long as they're good and they're diverse enough.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's the thing.
Because when you think about it, Cap 1 and Cap 2 are completely different movies.
Mm-hmm. Complete opposite sides of the spectrum, yeah. totally.
A period piece, as you stated last week, and this one is a political thriller. Mm-hmm. And it's... as long as they keep the movies and the characters diverse enough and the movies good enough, I think they'll be able to make these movies for years to come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but people, like, people will never get tired of them.
Yeah. I just meant that, like, it's weird to, like, pin all the troubles of Hollywood on power, you know, on superhero movies.
Mm.
When, you know, there's got to be, like, how many rom-coms come out
a
year?
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like...
less rom-coms, more punching people in the
yeah.
face, please.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, have you guys seen Mad Max?
I need to see that.
I'm probably going to see that 5 times. Okay, sorry.
I need to see that. Saying.
Well, anyway, like, I find it weird that everyone's just like, oh, superhero movies, they make so many of them. I was like, yeah, they also make 1 million rom-coms and 12 shitty dramas every year. There's 3 superhero movies a year.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Hollywood's dumb.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Hollywood being... or actually, no, there isn't a transition from that. Speaking of it being a thriller, yeah, you're right. Like, you know... okay, Cam, did you know who Winter Soldier was prior to seeing the movie? Or prior to seeing previews?
Yes, I did. Because I am friends with nerds like you who tell me things.
That's it, yeah.
Yes. No, I did know previously. I did suspect when I first watched the first Avenger that they were going to bring him back just because of all the testing that they did in the lab on him.
Yeah, that would have been weird to bring up and then not use again.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. those movies are very heavy on foreshadowing and subtle hints, etc. So I suspected it, and then someone confirmed it later on, but I was very happy when it actually happened, though.
Yeah. Sorry mm-hmm. for spoiling Civil War BT-dubs.
yeah.
But yeah, like, in general, like, you know, you know, we who have read the comic, like, or know people who have, like, you know, can generally, you know, we know, oh yeah, they're gonna reveal him to be Bucky. He's gonna come back to Steve's side or die, or you know, maybe die at the moment of redemption or something like that. You know, we can kind of predict that, but I don't think anyone predicted the Hydra being behind S.H.I.E.L.D.
No.
aspect, or I don't think anyone predicted S.H.I.E.L.D. no longer existing at the end of the movie.
I didn't see that coming, because, like, I didn't see that coming at all, just considering the fact that they had a TV show called Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, where are they going to go with that? Luckily for the show, it's gotten much better post-Winter Soldier.
Yeah, you keep got interesting. You keep telling me, like, oh, you need to watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And now they're getting into, like, Inhumans shit.
Oh, that's right.
And it's getting really good. Anyways, but yeah, pertaining to Bucky, I actually found it pretty surprising. But then again, like, we read the comics. Not everybody does. And when you see a movie with a general movie-going audience, I remember when Steve takes off the mask in that fight. An amazing fight, by the way. Wonderfully choreographed.
Yeah, the choreography is something I want to touch on.
Like, yes.
Yes. Oh, my God.
But the Bucky reveal, not a lot of people in the theater knew. Like, there were audible were audible gasps. Like, oh, it's Bucky.
It was really funny. My God. When I watched, because everyone just kind of did that really, like, hushed, like, gasp, and then went really quiet, and then suddenly, like from the far right, I just hear a very quiet shit.
Yeah.
And I was just like, yes, good.
Like, both my theater experience and even when I showed it to my friend a couple weeks ago, she was like, like, oh, it's him, because we watched them back to back. And in the theater, the person I was sitting next to was like, I was trying to, like, do you know who it is? Like, because I didn't want to spoil it, like some other people I know.
I like sharing,
like, because I figured it would make the movie better.
I also always ask if someone wants it spoiled.
And once, you know, his face was shown, she was like, "I knew it!" And she like punched me. But it was so funny.
Man, it's weird how some people just resort to violence in the theater.
Who would do that? I haven't a clue.
Consistent Super Cinema fans will know that I kept making mention of someone who kept punching me when we were watching Age of Ultron. That someone is at this table. I'm not going to name names.
Was it with the Black Panther stuff? Or
what was it on?
It was Wakanda? With the Infinity Gems.
Oh, the Infinity Gems, right. Yeah.
It was with the Gems and then later the Gauntlet.
That's right. I'm really excited for that.
Just all of a sudden, just whack! I can see the screen cam. I'm seeing the same shit you're seeing.
Your arm went numb. That was funny.
Yeah, you turned off my arm.
Oh, boy.
Speaking of turning off your arm, Bucky.
Oh, wow.
There's savage. Transition.
Anyway, Bucky is clearly Cam's favorite character. Cam, divulge. Yes.
I don't know how to start this. There's so
much.
Bucky
means to me.
No, there's just so much I love about the character. Because as I stated last week, I'm a sucker for the tropes where it's like someone from your side who is very close to the protagonist, usually through means not of their own will, get put onto the antagonist side. And I'm a sucker for those tropes like you are for, what's it called? Like the branching out stories. We talked about this last week. How Captain America is set in a very segmented time from the rest of the Marvel universe.
Oh, stories that are diverse from like main continuity?
Yes, that one.
I don't know if that's a trope I like. I just like...
There was one trope that you were a sucker for.
The trope that I'm an absolute sucker for is heroes and villains meeting each other outside of circumstances where they
were talking about
enemies.
That a lot in Daredevil, because the whole...
Yes, that's... Yeah, I mentioned it in Daredevil. I like it when heroes and villains meet each other in circumstances outside of one, or outside of the circumstance in which they're enemies.
Like him in the art gallery?
Like him in the art gallery. Or anytime like Lex Luthor interacts with Clark Kent.
But not Superman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not Superman.
Okay.
Like with actual Clark
Kent.
That's cool. Interview.
Yeah, the interview I was talking about.
Gosh. That was
good. I need to lend that book to you. I should just lend that book to you.
You need to lend that to me.
I will literally hand you that comic tonight. All-Star Superman. Superman's interview with Lex, where he's like, "You see these muscles? Human made." You know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I like anytime that like Bruce Wayne and like Bruce Wayne and Harvey Dent's like dinner in Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm.
I like Bruce Wayne and like Catwoman anytime they meet. Selena Kyle has a real name.
Peter's job. Peter Parker and his entire fucking job working.
Even him and J. Jonah Jameson. Like, yeah, I like heroes and villains, yeah, meeting, like, under those circumstances. And then, like, you know, especially when they realize, like, you know, oh shit, you're that guy. Mm-hmm. Oh shit, I'm this guy.
Yeah.
Also, I can't tell who are you. I'm blind.
Yeah. And that's, it's hard to have a moment like that in the MCU, aside from Daredevil, just because characters don't really have a secret identity
besides Daredevil. Yeah, Stark's public, Captain America's mm-hmm. public. Yeah. Or rather, no one cares who Steve Rogers is anyway.
Right.
You know, which reminds me of that amazing, from the Justice League animated series, when Luthor pulls off Flash's mask.
I have no idea.
At least I can know who Flash's secret identity is. I have no idea who this man is.
Yeah. You saw that post today too?
I reblogged it.
Okay, good.
Yeah, no, I love Luthor. Guys, I love Luthor so much.
Good.
I love Luthor more than anything.
Even more than Doctor Strange?
Yes, so much more than Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange ain't shit when Lex Luthor's on the table.
So you like Jesse Eisenberg more than Benedict Cumberbatch?
Oh, God.
Yeah, infinitely.
Do not bring Cumberbatch into this.
No, I don't like either of those actors, but...
Really?
I've never seen anything with Eisenberg.
He's very... See, watch so, the, I'm sorry, watch the
I don't
social
hate
network.
Him. I just don't like him. I'm an absolute zero. I know nothing about him.
I think his portrayal of Luthor will be a much darker version of his portrayal of Zuckerberg in The Social Network.
Hmm.
If you've seen that. Because he's very...
I've seen him in a lot of things.
Yeah.
So, I like him in those. I don't know. I liked Bumblebee Cucumber until he was in everything. So. Yeah.
That's the one thing I'm worried about Doctor Strange. It's just because, like, he's already Sherlock, Hobbit, Star Trek.
He's in every, like, franchise.
I just don't need him to be in Marvel.
Yeah.
And also, I've expressed concerns to you about being unable to search for that character on Tumblr.
No.
Without
seeing Benedict Cumberbatch.
/ Tom Hiddleston. Loki and Doctor Strange lovemaking.
Well, it's funny because everyone's freaking out. Like, I'm not a big fan of the whole Tumblr fandom thing. I get it. Like, I just really like these characters.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I do too.
But it's so funny how much, like, an actor can, like, bring into it fandom-wise. Because now that Martin Freeman is in the MCU, it's Martin Freeman, Tom Hiddleston, and Bulbasaur Cumberbun all, like, having their fandoms, like, oh my gosh, Sherlock and Tom Hiddleston.
We'll see what, you know, Bubbly Carburetor is going to be doing in that movie. But anyway, Winter Soldier. Ow.
I still appreciate that one post where someone's friend freaked out because they thought that Benedict Cumberbatch was a meme and they didn't realize he was a real person. Sorry, continue.
In general, we've already touched on what we appreciate about the movie. You know, for me, it's the camaraderie, you know, aspects. You know, I think we all appreciate, like, the thriller, all the twists. Because, again, we didn't know about the Hydra thing. You know, I had no idea Hydra was going to be back.
Oh, me either.
Like, I was just as freaked as anyone when Arnim Zola, like, popped up.
I didn't know he was going to be in it either.
That was good.
I thought it'd be, like, a flashback. Well, and there were flashbacks, but I did not expect the full-on Zola computer... homage they did.
Yeah, no, not even not in the slightest. Like, I didn't see any of that coming, you know. And obviously there's the Black Widow reveal at the end when she pulls off like that like kind of a hologram mask thing.
Yeah.
When she's like got her gun pointed at a senator or director.
What's his tits?
Wow, what is Robert Redford's character name?
Alexander Pierce.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I had Senator Kelly on my mind from the X-Men.
Oh, gotcha.
Other old politician white guy that fucks everything up for the main characters.
Oh yeah, that significant one person. Yes,
Senator Kelly. But yeah, no, like, I mean, yeah, there's so many reveals, and it really does a good job being a thriller.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yes.
The fact that a lot of people went into that movie, and as you said, a lot of people didn't go into that movie knowing about Bucky. Like, there's still surprises for everyone.
Yes.
To the point where a Marvel movie caught me off guard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, I didn't know some of those things were going to happen. We did this with First Avenger. We do this for a lot of movies. Let's just go through the characters.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Steve Rogers. Do I know his middle name off the top of my head?
Grant.
Yeah, okay. Wow, way to beat me to the punch, bro.
Steve Rogers. I love Steve Rogers, especially in this film, because, I mean, I talked about it last week on The First Avenger. Chris Evans does a good job embodying that 40s American war hero, but here he is 70 years later. And the film doesn't necessarily touch on the technology aspect of him adapting to society, because, like, you know, the scene with him in the room where Zola is, Black Widow's like, shall we play a game? Oh, it's a movie reference. And he's like, oh, I've seen it. Like, it's not about adapting to technology or movies or references or stuff mm-hmm. like that. It's adapting to society. It's adapting to modern government. It's adapting to today's version of freedom.
Yeah.
You know, and
where I'm from, the punishment comes after the crime.
Exactly. And mm-hmm. I think that line is very poignant. And the way he says, you know, this isn't freedom, this is fear. And his aspects on privacy and the way things are dealt today, I think, is really well done. That's tying back to the social commentary of the entire film. I think it's really well done, and it's good to further develop his character too, because his moral compass is so far pointed north. And I just really liked Chris Evans' portrayal and. Comparing him to the Captain America we see in the First Avenger, I think this Captain America kicks so much more butt. You can really see his full level of power, especially on the boat. Like right off the bat, you see him kicking people off the boat and throwing punches that just seem so much harder. And maybe that's a credit to the sound design. Mm-hmm. Like the scene where he punches the shield, that just is just so resonant, I feel
yes,
like.
Yes, I agree.
With how much, you know, how much force is behind that shield,
mm-hmm.
for sure.
Yeah, sometimes it's weird, but sometimes we forget that he's also got super strength. I think sometimes we forget that he has super strength because, like, so often, I know what you're doing, stop flipping me off. I think sometimes, like, especially in his fight against, like, Batroc the Leaper, you know, his fight style is very agility-based. You know, he's, like, throwing himself at enemies.
Yeah.
He's,
playing Frisbee.
He's playing Frisbee with the shield. You know, he's, like, literally, like, jumping over hurdles.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's a very agility-based fighter. And sometimes you forget that this guy can also, like, cannon lift up, like, cars.
Yes. You forget that he's a super soldier.
Yeah.
And you see it a bit in... It's a bit drastic in the first one because it is from Skinny Steve to this, you know, war hero. But then in the Avengers, he's sort of normal. He's just good with combat.
Yeah, and again, he can make those jumps, but
yeah,
again, that's agility based.
Exactly.
You know, it's, yeah, I mean, I don't think I could hold a car door just like up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he does or whatever. I don't actually know how much a car door weighs. Maybe I really can.
Right.
And I'm just making myself sound super weak. man, I'm weak shit. I can't even hold up a car door.
On a windy day.
But you know, yeah, you have a tendency to forget that. And then those scenes like where he's like, I mean, then there are scenes where he's like withstanding, you know, Mjolnir hitting him,
mm-hmm.
like, or hitting the shield anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, that's partly because of the shield, but mm-hmm. also like in general, like you kind of forget that he actually has super strength and he is something more than just a agile tactician guy.
Yes.
But yeah, the earnestness of the character, you know, continues on definitely from the first movie. It's just, you know, it's kind of more, yeah, it's more for an entire country. It's more for an entire people. It's not just the troops. It's, you know, he really is watching out for all of America,
mm-hmm.
you know, to the point where he's like making commentary on like little political aspects, like the, it's not freedom, it's fear and
right.
stuff like that.
And it's so funny to me that he still carries the name because it's the word America just has so much tied to it.
Certainly.
I think. But I mean, I've already touched on this before. It's just I think his ideals don't match with today's America,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's what's interesting about it. Because his ideals shine brighter, I think, in this film more so than the first one and Avengers, just because it is a darker film, and he's surrounded by this government agency, whose ideals aren't his, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
His ideals definitely do contrast a lot more with them, because they're a mm-hmm. lot the drasticness between the 40s government versus now is so much different, because again, with the whole fear is the next kind of freedom thing.
Exactly.
I really like the Winter Soldier.
Yeah, me too, me too.
On that note, shall we move on to the title character, the Winter Soldier?
Yes.
Holy shit. Holy shit, Bucky.
Bucky.
Holy shit, the Winter Soldier.
Bucky.
Cam, do you want to begin? You are literally reddening.
I really like this movie. No.
You sound like such a nerd.
You go ahead. I need to.
Man, I really like myself. This movie. It's my favorite portrayal of a superhero. Anyway,
hey,
granted, that's this entire podcast, so I can't really.
I lost my lisp. Thank you. I don't sound like that anymore.
You used to sound like that?
When I got my retainer, yes, I did.
That's amazing. Oh my god, I forgot I met you when you had braces.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Ooh.
That's like 4 months ago, Hamlin.
I know. I just forgot. Okay, Bucky. Bucky makes you feel too many feelings at once. No, Bucky does a really good job of portraying both, you know, the Winter Soldier and, like, then Sergeant Barnes, like, especially during the right before the brainwashing scene, as he's, like, he starts getting confused about, like, you know, oh, wait, no, that man, you know, I knew him. And then Robert Redford's like, no, shut the fuck up. No, you don't.
But I knew him.
I knew him. You know, like, you get not only his stoic, straight-faced, like, you know, badassery, you know, his like, ability to jump off bridges without blinking.
Right.
Crazy war drone version. But then you also, like, just for those, like, two brief scenes, right, before the brainwashing happens again, and as he's beating the shit out of his best friend.
Friendship.
It appears to me trauma is what breaks that net. like you when you get the glimpse of not just the Winter Soldier, but back to Sergeant Barnes, mm-hmm. or Bucky, mm-hmm. That you know you get that duality of character that comes across really well in a way that's you know pretty subtle and really 100% up to Sebastian Stan's facial acting. Mm-hmm.
Definitely, like just as you just pointed out, like just the look on his face, you can tell, like. For a brief moment that he's reverted, like, he remembers, mm-hmm. like, yeah, right as he's about to punch him, like, one last time, like, he stops, it's like, wait a second, oh my gosh, you know?
Cam and I were miming that fight scene. on that note, fight scenes are great, but back to characters. There's always a character that we love to touch on in every single movie he's in. Samuel Jackson. Sorry, Nick Fury.
Oh, I just wanted to point out...
Good, you brought up the fight scene.
I wanted to talk about the Winter Soldier just a little bit more. I thought the reveal was really well done, mm-hmm. Leading up to the point, because they touched upon Bucky just a little bit in the museum, but not enough to where, you know, if you didn't know who the Winter Soldier was, you didn't suspect him to be that. So they touched upon him, they reminded the audience... That it was, you know, of Bucky.
Yeah.
The fact that he died. And then...
we're literally watching Steven Rogers get punched while Donald's talking.
Because I'm with you to the end of the line. Yeah. I love that throwback as well.
This scene right here, one thing, like, it was at the beginning of the clip, like, right before before Steve stops fighting back, he drops the shield.
Yes.
And I definitely like the symbolism there because it is kind of... You see this in the first Avenger 2... just kind of the differences between Steve Rogers and Captain America. And here he's kind of like pulling back on the Captain America and trying to connect back with Bucky, not with Steve. Sergeant Barnes or the Winter Soldier.
I'm not your symbolic enemy. I'm your best friend from childhood.
Yeah. And he says the line, I'm with you to the end of the line, which I think is...
Enter gross crime.
which I think was really great. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that does a great job. And also, like, literally, like, he drops his flag.
Shield.
You know, so to speak. So, you know, you ask, like, you know, I'm surprised he kept the name. Like, at the end, he doesn't. At the end, he literally throws his flag into the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when flag just happens to be an extremely expensive vibranium shield.
Yeah, no big deal.
one great scene, I think, is... I didn't realize until after the fact when I watched it a second time, the scene where the Winter Soldier... I'm replaying it now. He's literally dragging Captain America's stripes through the mud, which and it gets all dirty you know, he's getting his suit dirty. Mm-hmm. And that calls back to the line that Alexander Pierce says when he first speaks to Captain America in this film, mm-hmm. where he's like, you know, to be willing to get dirty, to fight through the mud, or what, you know, line.
Oh, like, wow, yeah, I didn't even catch that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And here he is at the end.
Also, it's great that both movies end with Steve Rogers falling into the ocean.
Yeah.
I mean, at least this time someone knows where he is. Mm-hmm. But that'd be hilarious if, like, the next movie didn't take place until, like, 2070, because it took them another 60 years to find him.
Steve's just like, not again.
He fell in a lake, guys. It was an ocean last time. How's it taking another 70 years to find him?
But, yeah, back to the Winter Soldier, though. I think Sebastian Stan does a great job, even because just the small facial movements that he, mm-hmm. where he, you know, between where he doesn't remember, where he does remember, and just being a badass, you know.
That great
really
duality.
Sells it.
Yeah, he really does sell it.
Yeah.
And, again, I touched on this on the previous podcast, but his character really pushes forward Captain America's development as far as being, you know, the tragedy of it all, mm-hmm. both with him and Peggy.
Before we move on to any of the other characters, I'd like to talk about the scene that you're presently playing on your iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
The scene where Robert Redford, who has a name, and it's Alexander Pierce. There we go. Mm-hmm. Hey, I couldn't remember.
The actor himself has entered the movie. And yes.
Hey, I couldn't remember Tommy Lee Jones' character for the longest time. This speech that he's giving to Bucky right now, that is such, and I talked about this when we all watched it together like a week and a half ago. Mm-hmm. That is such a good reveal.
Yeah.
Because the speech that he's giving, the I don't remember the exact wording of it, but like, you know, the world
shaped the century.
Yeah, you shaped the century. The world right now is at a tipping point, and you have to, between like order and chaos. And you've got to push the scales or whatever. It's something along those lines. Which, by the way, is a great speech in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that during the previews, we didn't know this guy was a Hydra operative.
Yeah.
So we just naturally assume, and the way they cut it
with Captain America,
is it makes you think he's talking to the captain.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not.
But he's not.
Yeah.
He's talking to Bucky. And mm-hmm. the fact that, like, I mean, I was waiting for that speech the whole movie because it sounded like a really good speech from the trailer.
Right.
You know, the fact that, like, it starts with him being told to Bucky, you know, being surrounded by, like, you know, Hydra scientists and Crossbones is, like, right there in the background just mm-hmm. chilling. Because all the villains just hang out in this movie.
They have a book club, you know.
Yeah, that's such a... Dr. Doom has chosen his favorite book, Dr. Doom's autobiography. I hope you've all read up on this.
One thing, is a part of cryogenesis not having chest hair? Like, being oily everywhere? Is that a thing? Like,
I mean, Steve Rogers has the same problems.
So, oh, yeah. True.
Yeah.
Being a super soldier.
You know, Yeah. But no, like, that's such a good reveal. And that's that's even like a meta reveal. Mm-hmm. Because you would have to be aware of its filmic nature as a movie. In order for that reveal to take place, because you have to have seen a trailer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not a narrative reveal. That's like a meta theatrical reveal.
Like, good on you, people who have assembled the trailer. Oh, I love this part. Scene.
Let's move ahead then to, speaking of the coolest scene with a car, let's move ahead to Samuel Jackson, who has a name and it's Nick Fury.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I'm concerned, Nick Fury is, like, just Samuel Jackson. He's just the same person.
Well, I think we touched on this before. The comic character was based on him.
Oh, yeah.
And then they got him. Yeah.
From Ultimate Avengers, which is, by all accounts, not that good of a book. Mm-hmm. Except for that scene's great.
Uh-huh.
Let's talk about the Nick Fury. This is the first movie where he's come in. And I'm skipping over Black Widow just because we already kind of touched on her. In Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
So
This is the first time we really see Nick Fury as a actual, like, combatant character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Usually,
like,
it's,
you know,
just...
he's the officer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so there's the one bit where he whips out the rocket launcher and he takes down, like, a fighter plane as it's trying to leave the helicarrier. But that's all the action we ever see him in until the Winter Soldier car scene.
Yeah, I didn't expect that at all. That came out of nowhere, and I loved it.
Yeah, and again, it plays up those thriller tensions, like. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, where it's like, you know, there are no cops in this area or whatever, mm-hmm. says, like, the S.H.I.E.L.D. computer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, then you start to freak out and you think, like, you know, what's going on?
Yeah.
And that scene, like, just spins itself around.
Yeah.
To something you don't expect. That really creepy, you know, it is, and it feels creepy, mm-hmm. that daylight raid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, they are taking down one of the most powerful men in the country in broad daylight.
Mm-hmm.
And no one's even trying to...
Yeah.
I mean, would you?
It's the first...
No, valid.
Those guys have machine guns,
and like
I have my cell phone.
They have a super-powered battering ram. Let's not go there.
Well, let's see. Things I have. My laptop, a backpack, and running shoes to run away. Like, I wouldn't do shit. But, and like, it's such a creepy scene, and that's such a commentary, you know, like, that this is a fully, like, totalitarian state by this point, that they can have, you know, like, secret police kidnappings of, you know, officials that don't toe the line.
And again, it's kind of even creepier because so much of the movie, like, it ties into, like, actual world problems that are happening right now. Like, the whole, like, government's watching you and all that issues.
Yeah, that's a problem we normally associate with, like, you know, Russia.
Yeah.
And then it's really creepy to see that happening in, you know,
New York.
He's in D.C. at that point.
Oh, yeah. That's
which is even, like, really fucking creepy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, Samuel Jackson goes out full force during that scene as he's like, you know, what systems are left? Air conditioning functioning. and even the center console, like, super machine gun thing.
That was dope. Mm-hmm.
And, like, his rad driving. Like, this is the first time we see him as a action hero, not just
not just a guy behind the scenes.
Yeah, officer character drive, you know, character driver.
Right.
With, like, you know, his little officer's pistol and, you know, consoles of computers. And he did a really good job adapting to action hero.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Which is easy for someone like Samuel L. Jackson to do.
Yeah, but being in Tarantino movies and all that jazz. Yeah.
Exactly.
But yeah, no, fantastic job. And obviously I love Nick Fury more than anything. Mm-hmm. Not as much as Lex, though. He's not my favorite bald mastermind.
Sorry,
to actual mastermind.
One thing about the Phase 2 movies...
X-Men jokes. Sorry, go ahead.
One thing about the Phase 2 movies that I've noticed is that, especially after Coulson, the whole Coulson thing, the fake death thing, Pepper in Iron Man 3, Loki in Thor 2, Fury, Groot.
At a certain point, it's going to stop having its weight.
Exactly. And I think that's why they killed off Quicksilver for good. Like, they've stated that he's 100% dead. I think they need to add weight back to death. It's funny because it's sort of mirrored comics, because no one really dies in the comics except for, like, Uncle Ben. But
Uncle Ben is the only one.
Yeah.
The irony that it used to be Uncle Ben, Gwen Stacy,
and Bucky.
And Bucky were the only people you couldn't bring back. And now we have Spider-Gwen and the Winter Soldier.
Yep. And Jason Todd.
Was another one that you couldn't bring back, and now we have the Red Hood.
Yep.
And even, I mean, fuck, even Bruce Wayne's parents have come back as the Flashpoint Batman Joker.
Yep.
That was so good.
But that's not mainstream continuity.
Yeah.
But still.
Yeah. Still. But yeah, to its credit, I actually really enjoyed how Nick Fury came back, for what it's worth. And I'm glad that he's here to stay, because I like the character of Nick Fury, and the reasoning behind it was actually really cool. Like, the way they tied in Banner's serum, like, it didn't work for him, but we found a use for it. Like, I thought that was really well done. The way they've threaded Easter eggs into this film, I thought was really well done.
And if there's any movie that should have a character come back from the dead and do a reveal like that,
it's Nick Fury.
Oh, yeah, it's Nick Fury, but it's a thriller as intense as Winter Soldier.
Yes.
It's got to be a movie where literally everything is up in the air in terms of, is this happening, is this not happening, who's actually on what side, who's alive and who's not.
Right.
You know, who does Hydra exist?
Mm-hmm.
Answer yes. But, you know, like, it's got to be a movie where everything, you have to second guess everything. It's a full thriller.
It's a very human movie. Like, with the other Avengers movies, there's always, like, aliens or superpowers and all this stuff, but it's this one, it's just government and people and real human issues.
It's
and
the most
that's
down
what makes
to earth.
It relatable and
the most fantastical thing that happens is that Crossbones somehow survives the helicarrier hitting him. But no, the most fantastical thing is that Captain America is super strong instead of just very strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's how he should be though.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, actually, I'm sorry. Falcon's jetpack is a little bullshitty.
Well, even then, it's like, it's you know,
but like that,
science explains it, it's
but that's,
down to earth.
That's the most fantastical element.
Yeah.
You know, is his jetpack wings that can, like, turn completely at any, you know.
Well, in my opinion, the most comic booky moment in this film was when they go to the S.H.I.E.L.D. base and find out Zola has...
I'm in Zola.
Yeah, and the whole exposition dump. That was probably the most comic booky thing.
Certainly.
In the film for me, but you just buy it.
But like, I mean, other than those, like, tiny elements, this could be a real world movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it is.
Like, yeah, there's no Chitauri invasions. There's mm-hmm. no magic hammers. There's no there's no Pepper suddenly can shoot fire stuff.
I mean, unless you count the post-credit scene with the scepter and the twins. Like, there's no...
Yeah, yeah, there's no superpowers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On that note, though, let's... And I realize there's actually not a note I was on. Robert Redford.
Yeah. I thought he just, was
That's
great.
The point. Just
Robert Redford. Robert Redford. What did you think?
Says Donald, not having an opinion yet.
Remind me who Robert Redford is?
Alexander Pierce.
Alexander
okay,
Pierce.
I'm horrible with actors.
He was the head of department
he was the tool
security
bag.
Or whatever.
He was the head tool bag.
Yeah. He was, yeah, Fury's a senior.
I really... He's one of the characters that I love to hate.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, no, he was definitely one of the antagonists that I'm liking. I there are some antagonists. There are very few antagonists that I don't like, but
yeah,
I really...
You and I have an affinity for villains.
Yes.
Lex Luthor for president.
Don't forget Doom. You are
none shall stop Doom, because Doom cannot be stopped. Doom is best. Doom is bae.
No, I definitely liked how he portrayed him because, again, with the whole commercial thing, he definitely did, they definitely framed that like he was pitching that speech to Cap, but then they twisted around, and I didn't suspect him to be working for Hydra when I watched it originally, so that was a surprise for me, but...
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, I definitely did like how they went with that movie and had him working at the top. Because then it wasn't kind of just this mutiny from below. It was this has been here this entire time, and it was under your noses. And
precisely,
it
yeah.
took a 70-year-old cryogenic man to point it out to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all three of them did a good job. Him, the Senator, is it Stern?
Yes.
Alexander Pierce, Senator Stern, and Jasper Sitwell, who all do a great job of, like, they appear to be on S.H.I.E.L.D. side. They all do a good job of just being, even though they have such, Sitwell particularly has like a more minor role, and Stern only pops up for a second. Mm-hmm. But you have no reason in Iron Man 2 to think that he was on the other side, and they probably didn't even tell him he was, Hydra.
Oh yeah,
no.
Why would they? That wouldn't have come up.
Yeah.
I mean, we're even assuming they had Phase 2 written as early as Iron Man 2.
I doubt it.
I think they started writing Phase 2 around Captain America.
Yeah. But even then.
But yeah. Even if it's just things like, Fury's waiting for you upstairs, or, or welcome to the Triskelion, sir, or something like that. Like, you start questioning every single agent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's no more evident than the scene where, the captain's orders scene.
Yeah.
When everyone has, that Mexican standoff.
Yeah.
Everyone's got their, Pirates of the Caribbean style. Everyone's pointing their pistols in different directions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't you pull that trigger? Don't you pull that trigger? Don't you pull that trigger?
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. But, they all put up this facade of, yeah, of course, we're on your side. And you only start getting your, inklings of doubt about him when he's like, he does the, you better tell me what Fury told you, we need to know, And the thing is, the way he sells that performance, he makes you doubt Fury.
Right.
He's making you doubt Fury. We don't even have reason to doubt Pierce, even though we've been with Fury for, five movies now.
Yeah.
We don't have reason to doubt Pierce, and he makes you start doubting Fury. Like, oh, what's Fury been up to?
Mm-hmm.
And that's partly because of the bit they seeded at the beginning where he's
fear.
What missions aren't you telling me about, or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
That and the whole fear is the new freedom kind of thing, because that does kind of unsettle a lot of people to begin with, and then they...
Yeah, after he brings up the helicarrier.
The helicarriers. So people are already kind of jilted about that, and then there's this whole thing throwing more doubt onto him.
Yeah.
So it's... That combined, plus no reason to suspect Pierce, is...
Yeah. Masterful levels. Masterful levels of, hiding true character motives, of hiding huge, plot elements. Like, they just did a... Like, the Black Widow reveal at the end, where she takes off that, hologram mask, I thought was just, the cheapest of all the reveals. And, in any other movie, that would be the big one. That would be the big punch. Oh, my gosh, she's been Black Widow, for the last half hour or whatever.
Nope.
No. But, that was, in my opinion, the weakest one, because the other reveals
were so
strong.
Yeah.
So, what would have been the high point of any other movie was, the low point of this movie, because it was such a damn good movie, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we move into The Falcon?
Yes. I wanted to touch on Alexander Pierce really quick.
Please.
Mm-hmm.
just Robert Redford. He's such a good actor. Like, there are, like you said, there are moments where you do doubt Nick Fury just because Alexander Pierce, the way he, just Robert Redford's just the way he talks, the way he acts, and the way he talks to Captain America especially is just so well done that you don't really even suspect him until he says, "Do you want any milk?" Like, you think, like, even to the point where Winter Soldier's in his house, you think Winter Soldier's there to kill him. Maybe. Probably. And then he's like, "Do you want any milk?"
Oh, man, when he shoots his cleaning lady.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's like, okay. Like, I mean, from the previews, I did kind of suspect he might be a bad guy. For a while, I thought he might be Red Skull, because they did something similar to that in the comics, where he would, you know, but I'm so glad they didn't. He's just Alexander Pierce. He's a head, or, you know, a part of Hydra. Cut off one head, two more shall take his place. But I'm so glad it was just Alexander Pierce. Robert Redford did a great job as him. And yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Like, yeah. And I'm glad they made him what he is.
Yes.
A politician. He wasn't, you know, as much as we're talking about how great it was that reveal happened, that it was like, oh, it's Hydra this whole time. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't make him, like, you know, he is obviously a secret Nazi. But they didn't, like, you know, I'm the Red Skull, I'm Baron Von Strucker or Baron Zemo in disguise.
Yeah. Yes, it was just him.
It's literally just a politician.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, I mean, that sounds, you know, it sounds dumb, like, but yeah, that is pretty groundbreakingly, or not, you're not even groundbreaking, but that's pretty, like, yeah, I mean, in a movie, yeah, about American loyalty, it's great to have him, like, just be, granted, he's a secret Nazi and a Hydra officer, but, like, yeah. You know. Not to, you know, he wasn't wearing like a black leather jacket and a Hydra pin or
the horns.
Yeah. Or some sort of like eye patch or like mechanical arm or anything. Like, he's literally just a dude we're supposed to trust.
Yeah. Exactly.
Sam Wilson Falcon.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm very glad they brought him in since, obviously, or maybe not immediately, obviously, to the listeners at home. Falcon and Captain America were like, it was a team-up book from throughout like a majority of the 70s.
Yeah, they're like bros, like in most of the comics in the 70s.
And obviously in the comics very recently, Sam Wilson has taken over as the Captain of America, or Captain America.
Having some trouble over there?
The Captain of America, you know, like the Superman and the Wondery Woman.
He has taken over the Captain of the America.
What if she was the Wondering Woman? And she just had like, she was like the Riddler, but a hero.
The Riddler and the Wondering Woman going up against each other would be a frustrating.
Riddle me this, Wondering Woman. You're taking too long with your answer. Okay, so could we just fight then? Or? But no, I mean, obviously in the comics, Sam Wilson has taken over as Captain of America. Captain America!
Oh my god.
You know, but you know, they were a team up book for like most of the 70s, maybe part of the 80s. I don't recall off the top of my head. So I'm really glad they brought him in, because they could have, you know, they could have. We talk often about like how deep cut some of these movies go, and some of the movies, I think we can agree, the Spider-Man movies in particular are very surface.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
you know, they just kind of cover the surface of the story, but you know, the fact that they're, you know, bringing in Falcon, the fact that they're bringing in the Winter Soldier. Start to be really like deep cuts into the universe, which I
referencing Stephen Strange.
I love those deep cuts.
Yes,
I don't want just that base. I don't want to just skim over the story. Mm-hmm. I want to dig into it.
You like those Easter eggs?
Yeah, I like those Easter eggs. Stephen Strange suit.
Well, it's so funny.
But
like,
I think Sam Wilson accentuates that.
Oh yeah, for sure. And Anthony Mackie as an actor, he definitely accentuates. The Falcon's role as not just being he doesn't cover the trope of being a sidekick. You can really tell he's his own, you know, he can carry his own weight and at the same time you know, really be a partner to Captain America, not a sidekick, but you know, mm-hmm. his own hero and you know, in the future an Avenger. He's a new Avenger now, so
spoilers.
We had Avengers Age of Ultron podcast before this, so
yeah, just assume you're going to get full spoilers for every episode of Super Sentai you listen to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Our dear audience. I think that is helped in part by the way by the fact that he talks about what he did before he worked at the VA office.
Yeah,
you know that he's like, oh yeah, I did a bunch of paratrooping missions or whatever he called them. He had a certain word.
Pararescue.
You know, I did a bunch of pararescue missions, and the fact that he doesn't like adopt. You know, he's not a Robin. He doesn't adopt like Captain America's like costume elements. And when I say a Robin, I specifically mean Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. Robin, who is literally just dressed up like Batman but without a cowl.
Right.
You know, he doesn't adopt like any of his partner's elements. You know, he is his own character. You know, he doesn't have any stars and stripes on his costume. He's just Sam Wilson Falcon.
Yeah. One thing that I definitely did like in regards to the soldier aspect of him actually having served was just that beginning scene where they talk about the bed.
Yeah.
And how it's too much like a marshmallow. And that was definitely an interesting thing because, like, you can, like, watching just Steve's body language, like, when he first asks when, wow, I can do names, I promise. When fucking Falcon asks about how it was over there.
Captain America and the fucking Falcon!
But no, Steve, like, starts to pull back and his body language is very, like, closed up and against it. But then he can, there's just this kind of, again, camaraderie between them. And I really like this movie because of that, because there's no, like, romantic subplot or anything. It's just, these are my friends. These are the people that I want to punch. This is my friend who I like to punch.
And as I said toward the beginning, this is getting to be a lengthy podcast. As I said toward the beginning, it adds that real camaraderie feel of like these five people, you know, Maria Hill, Nick Fury, who I keep calling Samuel Jackson in my head, Falcon, Black Widow, and Captain America, of really just them against the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that there's no romantic subplots, they're all tied into this together. You know, some of them are the only people that know that some of them are alive.
Exactly.
Which is a weird sentence that didn't quite
come
out properly.
I get what you mean.
Yeah, like those four are the only people that know Nick Fury's alive.
Mm-hmm.
Or that Maria Hill's with them and not presently where, presumably she is in office somewhere on the Triskelion. But
I still love when she pulled off the helmet inside the armored truck.
Yeah.
It's
mm-hmm.
like good.
Just getting
on there.
Yeah. Good. This movie had a really good diversity ratio.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
two black actors, two women action leads,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. and then Captain America.
Yeah, and Bucky.
And Bucky.
Yeah. yeah. So just really solid character development all around. I think we can agree. Mm-hmm. And real quick, the villains felt.
Well, Alexander Pierce was a villain. Are you talking about?
Oh, I'm about to refer to Batroc the Leaper.
Okay.
And Crossbones, who had a real name.
Yeah.
But you don't remember it.
No, I don't. That's the thing. Is like, I mean, I talked in the Daredevil podcast, like, you know, we often don't get backstories or any sorts of depth, and sometimes not even names for like the henchman or the minion character. And then Daredevil like blew that wide open by spending an entire episode just on those Russian brothers' backstory and their interactions with each other. Whose names I also can't recall, but all I remember is I felt like really strongly about them, and I felt bad when they started to die, even though they were like using bones as shanks.
God, Brock Rumlow. I don't know.
Yeah, it was Rumlow. Yeah, or something like that.
I don't know words.
Yeah, Agent Rumlow.
There we go.
But, like, you know, often we don't get to, you know, dive into those henchmen. They're just expendable or whatever. Mm-hmm. And certainly that was the case with Batroc le Leper.
Yeah.
And his kung fu agility bouncing skills.
Well, I mean, I think his kicking abilities with his legs is a reference to the comics. And I even though he wasn't nearly developed, I don't think they had really planned for him to be.
Oh, no, certainly. He's literally in and out in one scene.
Yeah.
And then they later reference, like, oh, yeah, Batroc confessed or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know how I have to do the French. It's the Red Skull and Batroc de Lebel. It's two different accents.
Mm-hmm.
Just pray we never have to deal with, like, the Crimson Dynamo or else I'll go full Russian. Oh, you know I'll do Colossus's name like that.
Yeah.
Colossus. Anyway, tune into the X2 podcast where I go full Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll bring you on for X2. But no, like certainly with Frank Grillo's character, Crossbones, who you've already told me his name and I've already forgot it, Rumlow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brock Rumlow.
Yeah, like I mean I forgot his name, but he certainly had, and that's partly due to the fact that we assume he's a hero for most of that, mm-hmm. up until the elevator fight scene.
Love the elevator
fight scene. Yeah, me too.
Like, we assume he's a hero for the most of it. So he really has that presence. Like, you know, he starts off as just like, oh, it's just one of, you know, Captain America's new, like, Howling Commandos guys or whatever. Mm. I think they have a specific squad name for them.
Strike.
Oh, Strike. That's vague. You know, they have a specific squad name for them, but, you know, like, you just kind of think, oh, yeah, those are just his new Howling Commandos. That's his new task force that he takes with him everywhere.
Nope.
They don't, you know, they don't really, you know, yada, 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 or whatever. But then, you know, he starts to gain more and more of a presence for himself. The elevator fight scene, the captain's order scene where he's got the gun pointed at that SHIELD intern. I'm sorry, that guy's probably paid more than we will ever make.
The intern. Intern Kiernan.
Intern Kiernan. Tune in to Roll With It, our other podcast. Then the Sam Wilson fight scene.
Yeah.
Where he goes full on crossbones.
I still don't get how he survived. He got hit by a building, a helicarrier, plus the height. He was on like the 41st floor. First floor.
Yeah. Like, they don't put the building numbers on the outside. Like, he starts to gain more and more of a presence throughout the movie, and you start, you know, feeling more and more threatened by him each time. Mm. And he did a, you know, in a world where so many of those henchmen characters, or, like, you know, the action scene characters, are often forgotten, you know, Batroc included, like, he really stood out, and he did a good job, and I'm thrilled to see that he's coming back for Civil War.
Yes, in full crossbones...
Armor.
That like skin so mark good. Mask.
Yeah, it looks very, very good. I'm really excited for him to be back. That actors aside, I'm also really excited for the both writers of the script and the directors of this film.
Oh, it's the entire creative team.
It's the entire creative team, not just for Cap 3, but for Infinity War parts 1 and 2.
Yeah. Well, I know literally for I don't know if it's the same for Infinity War, but I know for Civil War, like, they're even bringing in the same director of photography and the same composer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, it's the exact
same. I love the music.
It's the exact same creative team. Good. And granted, for Infinity War, that may change, because it's not... Infinity War is not a thriller or a spy movie. It is a giant... So it might be a new DP.
Mm.
Or it might be a different composer.
Yeah, I could see that just because it's cosmic, but...
Yeah.
To its credit, I think the MCU is in... fantastic hands.
Oh, but anyway, that's why I'm so excited for Civil War. It's the exact same creative team. Yes. Not just the writers and directors. It's always nice when the writers and directors can go on. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it's the same cinematographer and the same composer, even.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm. Well, this film was so well shot as well.
It's
and the choreography.
Gorgeous.
Oh my gosh, the choreography.
We've moved away from character. I think we ran out of characters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless we want to talk about the Apple employee. But no. tune in to I Was There Too. Tune in to I Was There Too. The great interview with that guy. But yeah, no, like, yeah, moving straight ahead into cinematography, this movie is gorgeous to look at.
Mm-hmm.
It's got those muted grays. I don't know whether to call it gray. It's gray with like a slight tinge of blue.
Yeah.
Like,
you can notice that.
They've decreased the saturation slightly and increased the hues.
Yeah, there's like a slight blue tint to the entire movie. You know, contrast that with like Dark Knight, which is like drenched in blue.
Yeah.
For so much of that movie. And like, you know, I always talk about that, the like color theory in the Dark Knight trilogy that like begins.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah.
Really brown.
It's like sepia, gray.
Yeah, like
blue.
Yeah. And then grays.
Grays, yeah.
Yeah, it's gray and white contrasted against each other. And granted, I've only seen Dark Knight Rises like twice.
Mm.
But yeah, anyway, but those movies are like really like, you know, obvious. They're really like heavily saturated with those colors. The color correction's like through the fucking roof. And then you go to Winter Soldier and like everything's like dulled. And I think that's in part to do with the fact that it's a real world story.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are no aliens. There are no, you know, Mjolnirs. There's no Mjolnirs, as we pronounce it jokingly within our friend group. But like, you know, it's a more muted story and those muted colors really match it well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the dulled down grays and blues really accentuate the fact that this does have to do with the government, and it's a very, like you said, like very down to earth, very people oriented story.
Mm-hmm.
And the only color you really see is in Captain America's suit.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah, that's about it. Mm-hmm. Especially since Wilson doesn't have his colors.
Right.
Which I believe Anthony actually said, like, in interviews, is like, no, I wanted that full 70s fringe
suit. Yeah. He wanted the spandex. But...
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, well. Oh, boy.
Fingers crossed for new Avengers.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, have you seen his Civil War costume? Lots of tints of red. Mm. Lots of red. So I dig it.
I am
I dig
a happy
it.
Hamlin. speaking of happy Hamlin, motherfucking Dum Dum Dugan.
Not in this movie.
Yeah. Not in this movie. The greatest tragedy is that Dum Dum Dugan was not involved.
I
was thinking about Happy Hogan in my head for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
No. Watch Agent Carter. He makes an appearance, and someone actually fangirls over the fact that he is Dum Dum Dugan. And you will.
You should watch the
so
one
much.
Shots, too.
Yes,
that one shot.
I will do those right after. I need to clean my room. So I'll do that while I'm doing that.
Okay.
Good.
So cinematography. Yeah, you were mentioning the score. Like we were even talking about the score before we started the podcast. It was
very wonderful.
So good.
Some people criticized it because it had the electronic bits with the Winter Soldier theme, but I loved it because it has this like high pitched scream. But it's it sounds like an eagle or something, right? But it's actually like human screams, like that have been like sort of distorted that he used for the Winter Soldier theme, if you can remember it.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean I've only seen it twice, and like the score.
High-pitched,
Oh yeah, you're totally right. Oh man, okay, I'm gonna have to swipe that soundtrack off of you.
Yep, I have it. It's great.
Bless. I'm gonna have to take a listen to that because that. I really wish I took more time to appreciate some of the comic book movie soundtracks.
Mm-hmm. It's great.
I think I mentioned it in our Spider-Man 2 episode. I didn't really pay attention to that Danny Elfman.
It's iconic. I can't think of Spider-Man without thinking of that score.
I remember when I first heard the trailer, I'm just like, I'm downloading the trailer just so I can hear the song. And then when the movie came out, I was on the album immediately.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Then, of course, the one I paid the most attention to was the Daredevil.
Yeah.
Yes.
Doom. You know, the really slow, methodical one.
Honestly, mm-hmm. for a second, I thought you meant, like, the older movie
no,
with...
No, hell no.
That soundtrack was a...
I could go into a whole nother... A whole nother podcast.
Hell no, you take your filthy puns. Get out of here.
All right, you don't need to demonize me.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, sorry.
I could go into a whole nother...
Hamlin.
Cam hates puns.
I could go into a whole nother discussion though with Marvel Music though, just because.
Why not? We should do a bonus episode on that.
Sure.
With that in mind, though, I believe we have come down pretty great on the plot. I think we're all fans of the thriller camaraderie nature.
Mm-hmm.
All of the characters got A pluses from us, pretty much.
Yep. And the film
best Black Widow on the market.
Yep.
The film in general is great. Cinematography is great. Mm-hmm. They do so much with this movie, and it comes out just absolutely amazingly.
Mm-hmm.
With that in mind, I believe that concludes this episode of Super Cinema. We covered, if you weren't listening to the last hour, Captain America, the Winter Soldier. Once again, I am Ben Hamlin. You can find me at Ben C. Hamlin on Twitter.
At Now Donald for myself.
And your name is?
Donald. Or?
What? Anyway,
And
we are joined. We are joined today by none other than
Cam Mullins. And you can check out a current project that both Ben and I are working on at infinitybreak.net/Ravenwatch.
Our high fantasy webcomic, Ravenwatch, with fantastic illustrations on behalf of Cam Mullins.
So much purple.
That's going to fade soon. I believe the next scene is majority white.
There's not going to be a lot of purple for a long while.
Not until chapter, I want to say 3.
I don't know. You haven't written that far.
Yeah. Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
Okay. You haven't written it out where I can see it.
Yes, I have. Anyway.
I don't think you shared that with me.
Pretty sure I did. Anyway. Because I wrote up into... Okay, never mind. Anyway.
Anyways.
With that in mind, this has been our Winter Soldier episode. Now, we don't know what we are doing down the line. We got to start building a backlog for the summer season. So, let us know which movie you want us to do. Go ahead and tweet us at InfinityBreak23 or at either of our personal accounts. And I'm sure we'd love to talk comics in general with you, but go ahead and tweet us and let us know what movie you want us to see. Whether that be Ghost Rider 2, Spirit of Vengeance, or a good movie. either way, whatever movie you want us to watch, go ahead and let us know at Infinity Break 23.
In the meantime, once again, I have been Ben Hamlin.
I have been Donald Orr.
And I'm Cam Mullins.
And this has been Super Cinema.
Bye.